Six games for the weekend, and a Rodney Ed would have been casting a very, very keen eye across them, I'm sure. Former coach of the Western Bulldogs, the Sydney Swans, and of course the Gold Coast Suns, joins us as our Monday analyst on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Rocket.
Morning, Daniel. How are you?
Going very well. How's your weekend?
Very relaxing, actually.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so not too bad. Had no game, so that was good, no coaching. And then, as you were the MC yesterday, I had a Hawthorn reunion weekend.
A festival.
A festival. They had three events, so they didn't leave it by half, the Hawkers. But, yeah, so it was a good weekend.
Do you enjoy catching up with your premiership teammates? Is it a good thing to do?
Yes, it is. I think, I don't want to sound glib about it, but when you have a few, you sort of...
Just another
but,
one.
But it was good. That was good to see the guys on the weekend.
You'll be getting used to that, Jim, coming up shortly. Level is, another one, another premiership reunion coming up.
We've had 07, you've had that one in 10
yeah,
years.
Yeah, see, real smart. Everyone thinks, you couldn't win back-to-back, but if you stagger them over 2 years, you can pace yourself.
Little two-year windows.
Yeah, two-year windows,
you planned it beautifully.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to tell us.
You'll be in a constant state of reunion.
Or rehab.
One of the two. And we had to wait, Rocket, to Sunday afternoon for the best game with Geelong and Richmond for the weekend. Just the six games, of course, in the bye round. Mm. But Geelong and Richmond was the best, and we saw the Tigers rocket their way back up to the top of the table.
Yes, they did really well. Now their pressure was excellent. I thought the Cats had their opportunities at times. They just... didn't use the ball as well as they normally can, and that was even without enormous pressure at times. I know it was wet conditions, so I think the Cats would be able to take a bit out of the game.
Yeah, I reckon they've done that in the last couple of years in the big games. They've just turned the footy over or haven't used it as well as they should going inside 50. It's always been something they've been trying to work on, and I think with Gazza back, and I think that's the want for people at Geelong, for Gazza to play a little bit more forward half because, coaching him, he makes such good decisions with the ball and is a good kick going inside 50.
Yeah, he didn't kick it that well yesterday, which is unusual. One in the back pocket there turned over and then a couple going inside 50, which players have those days. But like him and Daniel Wells at Collingwood, and that's why they got Daniel Wells, having that ability to make the right decision and have good skill, especially going inside 50, is gold.
Rocket, is there any benefit anymore for, you've coached young sides, to send young players along to games like Richmond v Geelong? Because you watch that game, the intensity is through the roof compared to young sides going at it. You can just see the difference, whether you follow the sides or not, watching on TV or at the ground. Is there any benefit still in sending young players to watch a Richmond v Geelong at the MCG like a supporter, but also that's the intensity you need to get to?
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt about that. I think the more you can learn, the better. And I think, you'd send, you wouldn't send 30 at the one time, but you'd send 6 or 8 with a coach and be able to look at the positioning, about how they put pressure on, where they go, and the intensity of the game. I think the more they can learn, the more that they get exposed to that, the better they work.
It's a difference from watching it on TV, though, isn't it?
I think our game is a live game. There's no doubt. I don't think it's so much a TV game. And I think on TV, you can't see where players are outside the next kick, either side of the play. So I think better going to the game. And I think, like, a defensive coach could take the six backs and even development, take the players that play in the VFL, be able to go to see the game and see how the best do it.
One of the interesting things from yesterday was Geelong keeping Richmond to 83 points, which is something that most teams haven't been able to do at the MCG to Richmond. So I think they would get confidence out of that. But Jimmy, just interested in, as a Geelong player leaving the game last night, even though they didn't win, knowing that they've still got Menzel, Scott Selwood, Taylor, Guthrie, Cockatoo, Henderson to come back into that team, would they feel that they're closer to Richmond than what they may have thought they were, or because they've got them later in the year again at the MCG?
Yeah, from a Geelong point of view, you take confidence out of it. I guess if you're the Geelong coaching panel, you've got to make a decision next time you come back to play the Tigers at the MCG. How many of those young players have learned from the last experience and you're back that they're going to get better? Or do you go back to the old hands who have been there and you know what you're going to get? Because they're young players and you go up and down with with your form, but it was the bottom, always in the big games, it's the bottom four or five players that make the difference, because we knew what we were going to get from Joel Selwood, but we knew what we were going to get from the Richmond veterans like Rance. It was the bottom half dozen. I came away from the game thinking Richmond's bottom half dozen, I'm being respectful here, were much better than Geelong's bottom half dozen.
But most of them might not play.
Yeah, so
when
but
they
that,
play
that,
again
that,
later in the year.
That'd be the questions being asked by the Geelong coaching panel. When if we've got, you know, some senior players and these young players that we went with last time, what's the balance? Do we back them in and hope that they've learnt from their previous experience, or do we go back to some old hands who did some of our older stuff? Because a lot of these young players are pressure players at the moment at Geelong. You know, you look at, is he Fogarty or Fogarty? I get confused which one the Geelong one is.
Fogarty.
Yeah, we'll go with Fogarty. Yeah, do we go with Fogarty again on the forward line, or is that Menzel's spot now? Yeah. Who can hit this? We know Menzel is a goal kicker, but he's not a pressure player. Do we go back to someone with a bit more experience on the half back line? I know he's taller, but you know, Harry Taylor or Henderson, or instead of Zach Guthrie. So that will be the questions. They'll certainly have confidence, but then it becomes a selection issue.
Well, I think, just taking a step further back to the MCG fact, I think yesterday it's not necessarily about winning for Geelong. They just needed to know, I reckon, they can compete with Richmond at the MCG, considering their dominance.
And considering what happened in that final last year.
Yeah, and at three-quarter time, it's a point. Like, it's anyone's game from that point in time onwards. Richmond overran them in the end with the way that they play and got a few goals out the back. But I think Geelong taken a heap out of that.
Yeah, because from this time to last year is the midfield depth. Richmond were fantastic around the ball last time they played Geelong in that final. They smashed them around the ball, so you immediately play the territory game and that pressure. Whereas this time around, you've got Gazza, Tim Kelly, Menegola's found his role, and then probably the one that will add to that mix is Scott Selwood when he's right. So they've actually got more depth to be able to compete against Richmond, who are super strong around that part of the ground.
Yeah, and Shane Edwards continued his good form for the Tigers. I mean, he's had some sort of year,
hasn't
he?
Yeah. He's a terrific player. What, how old is he? 29, 30, isn't
he? Yeah, he's 30, already.
30 years old. And he's probably playing his best footy.
Yeah.
So fantastic effort.
And my favourite player, Nick Vlossen.
Your mate was very good, wasn't he?
He was dominant yesterday. You don't have to have 30-odd possessions, but yeah, I think he had 21. But he
won some real vital ball at times, didn't he?
He looks strong, and he marks the footy. I love guys who marks
the ball really well yesterday.
Yeah. I love guys who back themselves in the end. Those conditions yesterday wasn't really conducive to doing that.
Yeah.
But he looked really assured over the high ball.
And we spoke to Jack last week, Whitey, about the Tigers and the way that they've been playing. Jack Rewalt, I'm speaking of. And he was talking about that probably hasn't been as clinical as perhaps last year, but they still found themselves, after round 13, on top of the ladder. They're a bloody good team.
Look, there's three teams now that are two games clear of everybody else. But the problem for Richmond is that two of the others, well, the other two, are non-Victorian teams. So they've still got to find a way to make sure they're not third and that they're second.
Yeah, because it's going to be an enormous advantage for those interstate teams if they finish top two.
Absolutely. So I'm not saying that there's anyone going to jump up and sort of contend for that sort of top two spot, because there's still plenty of the season to go. But it's rare, Rocket, for there to be a gap of two games already with three teams.
Yeah, I think the competition's got some demarcation lines in it already, and it's down to 10 teams, which at the moment you won't think Adelaide are going to make it. So the Giants or the Hawks fall over at any stage, or even the Kangas, I suppose. So it's those three teams are probably for the last spot.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to do the maths as to how many you need to get in. I reckon you're going to need minimum 13 and a half.
I haven't gone through the draw, but it's probably who plays the bottom four teams the most.
Mm.
So that's going to be some... You know,
and that's an advantage to Hawthorn, which we'll talk about the Hawks shortly, but you look at some of them. They've got Gold Coast, the Giants, which is tough because it's in Sydney. Then they've got the Bulldogs, Brisbane and Carlton. That's their next five. Mm. Put four in the book there.
Yeah, it's probably down to the bottom five now that with the Bulldogs' injuries. There's probably five teams that teams have chalk up on the board, you'd think.
We'll come back and talk about that game on Saturday night, Hawthorn and Adelaide, because I think both teams have storylines coming out of that that clash at the MCG. 19 past 7 on a Monday morning. Rocket Ead is with us, our Monday analyst. We'll go through all that and more from round 13 after this on The Breakfast Club.
I think we've got to train. We've got to train it. I mean, sport doesn't give you an easy out. Yeah, and we're not playing well. We've got to train it. We've got to get guys back in a headspace where, you know, they're able to bring their strengths that they've got. There's still a lot of talent in that room, you know, and we're not seeing it at the moment. So that's our challenge from a coaching viewpoint. That's their challenge from a playing viewpoint. But there's no easy way out of these situations. We've got to do the work, and you know, that's what we'll focus on. Do the right work in the right areas to get improvement. Because as you can see, we were around the mark at half time, but we just didn't sustain it to the level at Hawthorn were, and it's been the same the last couple of weeks.
We've got to train it. That's what we're going to do. We've got to train properly. We've got to train it. The Adelaide Crows coach Don Pike there talking after the loss to Hawthorn on Saturday night at the MCG. It was by enough, 56 points in the end. Just the 35 inside 50s for Adelaide as they were kept to 32 points full stop.
Lowest score since 2011.
That's a long time. And considering the way that they've been playing their footy of recent years and how aggressive and attacking they've been, be kept to 32 points, it's got to be a bit of a red flag, doesn't
it? Yeah, you can see their style of play. It was really, obviously the Melbourne game has knocked the stuffing out of them, but even a couple of games before that, they weren't taking the game on as much. They played down the line, and their brand really has been set up well behind the ball. And on the counter-attack, just quick hands and quick movement, whether they just their injuries in the middle of the ground, or whether the forward line, they just haven't got confidence to be able, the ball comes back out too quickly. But you really see now they're really stagnant and just not scoring.
Coaches love to say if there's an injury, the next man up just fills the role. But sometimes it's just the capability of the player can't do that role. You take out Brody Smith, people forget. He's that rebounding halfback. The desk, Rory Laird.
Yeah.
They're missing another one across halfback as well that I can't remember. Is it just sometimes, you know, that line that coaches love to use, next one in, just doesn't apply?
Oh, there's no doubt. There's a tipping point. And if you lose a really good player, say in your best three or four, say a Sloan, you're replacing him with 25 or 26 on the list. So there is a huge gap of talent. Now, generally, teams might be able to cope with that. But once you mount it up, A, in numbers, or B, in quality, as in three or four good quality players, it can really impact you. And I think it's worn them down, and I think it reached a tipping point probably the Melbourne game, maybe the week before, and just haven't recovered.
And you even see in the SANFL at the moment, they got whacked on the weekend. I think they scored about three goals or something like that for the game. So it's just, it has a ripple effect down.
It has. And you have a look at the Giants early in the year. They're just starting to get their players back. And their NEFL side was getting smacked. And I know some media commentators here in Melbourne were bagging them and saying, oh, they're hopeless because they're needful to them. But it's just the numbers. If you're losing numbers, as in quantity, but certainly quality, it does impact you.
And it does show how good Geelong has been to get to 8-5 considering the injuries that they've had to really important players in the forward line, the midfield and defence. It has been quite incredible.
Do you think Geelong's had the equivalent of Rory Sloane, Brad Crouch, Rory Laird, Tom Lynch, Mitch McGovern and Brody Smith, though?
No.
Well,
no, they haven't.
No.
Short answer is no.
Menzel, Scott Selwood, Taylor, Guthrie, Cockatoo, Henderson, Ablett missed 4 weeks.
Cockatoo, Henderson into that batch of players that Jimmy's read out of Adelaide. I mean, they were the stars of the team. Cockatoo's a good, fine young player. Henderson's a
Cockatoo hasn't really
player.
Played football.
No, I know that. But then Ablett missed a fair bit of footy as well.
But he's played a fair bit compared to those blokes.
Yeah.
But it is a concern because, as you said before,
they were going bad, though, before a few of those got injured.
True.
As Rocket said before, that it's down to 10, Adelaide are 11th. So to make the grand final and then miss the finals the next year.
Well, yeah, well, the Bulldogs last year. Yeah. They were premiers and missed the finals. So, I think it's too big a chore now from where they are. I know they're not far out as in mathematically, but they've got a tough draw. I know they get some players back. The players back, the ones who have missed more than 3 weeks, will take a week or two to really get some sort of conditioning for games. So I think it's too big an ask for them.
Put a red line through them. 6-7, a percentage of only 100. They've lost 6 in a row. And the next 5 are West Coast, Richmond, Geelong, Brisbane and Melbourne.
Ooh, that's Gustavo's.
Goodbye.
That may be curtains. What about the Hawks? Are they playing as well as you would like to see them play? Or do you think there's still plenty of improvement? Or is this their level, Rocket, do you think?
I think it's about their level. Obviously, if Cyril comes back, and whether we don't know that will improve them.
Yes.
I think having the two rucks helps because it gives Ruffy some support in the forward line. They've always defended well. They played Port Adelaide the week before, and it was 9 goals each. So they do defend. They kept Adelaide. I know that we've talked about them. They're struggling kicking goals. But they do defend. They've always defended well. And it's on the back of their defence they do attack. They've struggled to score, I think. Sicily kicking 3 helped them, but that was just obviously they've pressed up. That'll be against the better sides as their ability to kick goals. But Having said that, once they get in the eight and there's a chance with their draw that they can get into seventh or eighth, they'll certainly scare some teams.
Adelaide didn't have a clearance in the third quarter. Not one.
It does seem unusual.
Didn't score in the third quarter.
Well, the two rucks work for Hawthorn because they can both mark the footy.
Yep. Yes.
So if you play two rucks, you can't have one of them who's just a centre bounce hit it and then just jogs around the ground. So we've seen Big Boy, he can get around the ground really well, but Segler marked the footy really well the other night.
He did. He did, and he gave them a bit of an option up forward, so you've got to be mindful of him. I mean, he's not going to kick six, I wouldn't have thought, at any stage, but if he kicks a couple and takes a couple of marks, he can feed off, and that takes the pressure off Roughhead.
It's the old David Hale role, isn't it? He sort of sits in the pocket, kicks you one or two, but goes in and plays as a genuine ruck.
I've asked this a number of times, and I'll ask it again. James Sicily. Now, he's my boy. Would you keep him as a key position defender or whatever?
Yes.
You know, or would you be? You wouldn't be tempted to play him forward?
No. Yes. This is, how many times have we discussed this? If a guy is All-Australian quality, he hasn't made it All-Australian side, but he'd be pretty close this year, in a position, why is this fascination to, well, let's turn him into something else?
He started as a forward, didn't he? But he's playing that good. Why would you risk putting him in the forward line and it could be a bust and then his confidence goes and then you play someone else in the back line?
He's the most damaging halfback in the game at the moment.
No, I know that. I'm just,
you types, you. I'm going to wag my pen.
I'm just saying that with you look at the draw, and I'll say it again, Hawthorn, they got Gold Coast in Tassie, then Giants away, Bulldogs, Brisbane in Tassie and Carlton.
So you're being arrogant and flaunting with your form?
Yes.
I would throw him forward just to see what happens.
Well, I can tell you
he
what happens.
He could destroy games as a
centre. He just destroyed a game at half back.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
I'd like to see him go forward and see
why.
Well, they are having issues
because
in the
They're having issues with their forwards. And if he can kick three goals at centre back or whatever the role he plays in a quarter,
but
could he do if he was playing as a permanent forward?
They've got enough forwards who can turn their form around.
Can I put something to you?
Yeah.
These are questions. These aren't statements.
If you were James Sicily was in the forward line playing against you, what would you do, or what would you tell his opponent to do?
You'd drive him into the ground.
Niggle the hell out of him, and he'd lose his SH1T. it's too big a risk.
It's different coming from the back and kicking goals and having no one really playing on you, rather than being forward and have someone right up your tail.
You're getting told to take a walk outside in match committee. Okay, go have 5 minutes.
I'm just throwing that there as questions.
Yeah, I'm yellow carding you from match committee. You can come back, not quite a red card.
I think it's too risky, to be honest. I think with his temperament and the opposition, what they could do and they'd focus on him, I think maybe could lose his way a bit.
Okay.
Just the way the game's being played now with that high-pressing forward half zone, this is a guy who can get it and just completely ruin your zone.
Yeah, no, that's a fair call.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
He's going very, very well, Jim, as you say, and he's Whitey's boy, so he's pushing a case for him to be everywhere. And that's okay, because when he gets the ball, things normally happen pretty well for the Hawks. We'll get to a break, 28-8 on a Monday morning. Still got four other games to get our teeth into to wrap up round 13 with our Monday analyst, Rodney Ead.
Victoria's Own Breakfast Club.
We've spoken to the group. Simple question is, why didn't we want to win the game? Why didn't we want to win the game? We did so well in the first three quarters and proud of their effort to be at that point, but that's what makes it harder to swallow because of the last quarter, because the effort was really good in the first three quarters.
27-8 on a Monday morning. That is the voice of Stewie Jew, who's slightly concerned about his players' mindset in the last quarter against St Kilda up there at Metricon Stadium on Saturday night. Fascinating evening of football watching to see what happened. They had such a stranglehold on the game and they go down and cough it up by 2 points. Rodney Eads with us, our Monday analyst on the Breakfast Club. Fascinating, I think, this game, full stop, for so many storylines. And if Jade Gresham doesn't kick that goal,
good goal,
which was a terrific goal in the last minute of the play, I'm sure it's a very different conversation in terms of where the football community faces this morning, Jim. It's all about Alan Richardson and the Saints. So 2 points makes the difference, or effectively 3 points would be a loss, makes the difference between Alan Richardson being the headline act and the Saints getting off the hook again. It's a funny game we live in.
Yeah, how many articles do you reckon were filed at three-quarter
time? It would have been a few, I reckon.
Do you reckon, though, they've pressed pause on them? They haven't thrown them out?
I'd be saving a copy.
Yeah.
I'll be saving a copy. But remarkable that the storyline changes on the back of one kick.
Yeah, well, the whole last quarter was typical of the Gold Coast. They play three quarters of football. The last four quarters, I think it is. Is it 2 points?
Four last quarters.
So 200 minutes of football.
They've
kicked 2 points.
It's an extraordinary stat, that. It really is.
And to make it even worse, St Kilda were without two players. So Bailey Rice was in Noddy Land.
Yeah.
He thought he was at Dreamworld on the Gold Coast. And Webster was hurt. And they had minus 40 possessions.
So it was unbelievable. I thought when Webster went off at the six-minute mark and then the Suns were on top, they looked slow, St Kilda. They looked really slow, except for Jack Stephen. They looked really slow. I thought, without Webster, how are they going to win this? How are they going? And they just, obviously the Suns stopped, but the Saints showed, they dug deep, which is a real credit to them. They need, and we've spoken about it here, haven't we, that we thought their effort was being good at times for most of the games, and they're still getting beaten. So if that's their maximum effort, they need to bring that for four quarters every week to get a chance to win.
Watching Whitey, did it say to you that the Saints were playing for the coach, the old adage?
I don't think they've ever not been playing
for
the coach.
No, but did it even show up
Maybe a little bit. I thought, and was there a lesson in it for St Kilda? That because it happened against West Coast as well, and to a lesser extent against Fremantle. When they get behind, they worry less about the outcome and they free up and they just play on instinct as opposed to overthink things.
Well, maybe the other way.
Is that a lesson?
But are they overthinking it? Is that being coached that way by the assistant coaches? Are they giving them too much information?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking is that, you get five goals down going in the last quarter. Hey, we've just got to run and gun and just take it on and not worry about the ramifications.
I think their ball movement, the first three quarters, they were clear at times and then they do a U-turn to handball backwards and they overpossess and they got turned over. And then when they were about 70 out, they just bombed it forward. They had two modes, and they both weren't working. Then the last quarter, they were tougher, they lifted their intensity, they tackled more, but they went forward more quickly. Mm. They didn't muck around with the ball. They didn't overpossess.
That's my point, because they had to, because the game was running out of time.
Could it be the other way, though? They are actually thinking about it. Or maybe ask you, Daniel, that last quarter, geez, if we lose this, what will this week be like?
Well, that's what actually impressed me from St Kilda, I must say. With the pressure going into the game from the football world on them, to be 30, whatever the points down they were at three-quarter time, and be able to come back and not have that weight of, oh, my God, the world's about to cave in.
But could that have been the thinking, though, that helped lift them? Like, if you didn't give it more than everything, I know that sounds funny.
That could... Yeah, you could take that either way. That could make or break you at three-quarter
time. I think
the
way they've played this year, I wouldn't have thought that was the case.
Okay. Yeah,
I would have thought... behaviour and their consistency of what they're doing. I think it's more that shivers, we've got to do something here. It's more like the pressure's off a bit and let's not overthink it. Let's just go and do. Yep. And I think previously maybe it's a bit more analytical and a bit more we've got to go from A to B to see we've got to have this many handballs. We've got to do whatever the case may be. And I think the shackles are off.
That's how I sort of saw it.
Yeah. And I think, and you were, even in good sides like you guys, played, you can't overthink it too much.
Yep.
You can't, as a player, it's C-ball, get ball, maybe you're positioning at times, but if you've got too much going through your head, it actually takes it away from you.
Because we've seen that with Collingwood this year, that they seem to have simplified.
I reckon they're just playing. Yeah,
when they've got the ball in their hands, hey, you guys, you take responsibility on yourself. You do what you think is appropriate, as opposed to anything that's been coached during the week.
The Kangas a bit as well are doing that.
I think
that's what Richmond did.
I think there's parameters that they play in. Obviously, they've got the game plan, but within those parameters, if you drill down too much as a coach and you make it too complex, we have to kick it to A, and if that's not on, then look for B and look for C, and there's too much going on. There's too many. They've got to instinctively take the option. I think they did that.
So let's not miss the Suns here. We brought up the fact that they just play three quarters. Like, they'll go, oh, we're young, we're this, we're that. Is it fitness or is it mindset?
Well, they started to put some players back, but the other 3 weeks, they've parked the bus in your terms. So that's been tactical.
Yep.
And they haven't tried, against the Giants, they didn't try and move the ball out of the back 50. They just went slow, wide. Against Port Adelaide, it was the same. So it's a combination probably of fitness, I think, mindset. Do they freeze themselves? And see, is it tactical that sends a message to freeze? So, we're not trying to score. We are trying to save it. Numbers back. So let's play careful.
So when Stuart Dew says that he asked the players, did they want to win, what was he doing in the coach's box that set them up to win?
Yeah, it's hard to say on the TV, to be honest. They didn't seem to have... I mean, Lynch seemed to be down across the middle of the ground or back a fair bit of the quarter, so I'm not too sure what he did and what he didn't do, to be honest.
Yeah, they're hard to tell from the TV, but, I mean, if that's the tactic of not wanting to move the ball forward in the last quarter and try and park the bus and save, it hasn't worked very well. They've lost five in a row, at least.
I think they tried to score early because Lemons had a shot, kicked it out in the full. Ainsworth looked as though he was running into 50 and fell over.
That was a huge moment.
Whether he got tripped or not, that was probably questionable. But that was late in the game. Probably about the 10-minute mark. Once they scored their second St Kilda, it seemed as if there was a real shift of numbers back for the Suns.
I must confess, watching it, I was thinking of you in that the lack of leadership on the field, which is what you've spoken about, the lack of seniority in that team at the moment, and Michael Barlow playing in the kneeful for whatever reason. They just don't have enough senior players out there that when the game is getting away to take hold of the match.
Yeah, that's obviously one thing they've got. Obviously, they had a couple. Richitelli was there and Lyons was back. I thought Witts played quite well. He's probably not a super experienced player. Lynch is a leader. But, yeah, there are, as Jim said, they are still a young side and they certainly need to learn that leadership part.
It was a disaster for the Gold Coast Suns, what it was, and a bit of a godsend for St Kilda, just pushing away the Wolves just for a little while.
Now, can I talk about Carlton?
You can talk about Carlton.
By all means.
I want to ask a question. Should clubs be rewarded with priority picks or compensation of any type for poor management?
Well, they don't get priority picks.
Well, they might get a priority pick. They said they didn't want one, but that doesn't mean if they were given one, you reckon they'd knock it back?
Yeah, no, they wouldn't. No one would knock it back.
But with priority picks, let's even deeper, not so much on Carlton. Last week, the question was, do the Suns need priority picks? And there was a big push for that. But if they need one, they've won more games than St Kilda, Brisbane and Carlton.
Yep.
So they need priority. If you only give four teams, and you can't just give one and not the others, if you only give one, if they all get priority picks, does that dilute the draft that much? If I was at one of the other clubs, to answer your question, I suppose, I'd be filthy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they should be.
But my view is that there should be none.
No, I agree.
There's two things that should go. Priority picks and any ambassadorial contracts to anyone.
I'm all for ambassadorial contracts.
I am too.
100%.
The reason why it is a lot more difficult to make the marketing arrangements for a player in the northern states.
It is. And they're trying to get people up there to stay there and grow the game and do it from the grassroots and build organically from the local kids. And you need ambassadors, you need heroes, as we've talked about a lot on this show in the last couple. You need heroes to look up to and want to emulate. And that's where the ambassadorial stuff is really important. Now, I wouldn't be including in any way part of the discussion for a contract. The ambassador stuff should be done on, like, in January. Contract's done by the 31st of October, whatever it is. Then the AFL come in over the summer and say, right, we're going to make you an ambassador. So it doesn't influence the decision of the player or the club saying, well, we'll back off our contract payments because you're going to get $1 million ambassador.
Yeah, Danny, I totally agree with you. I think there should be some ambassadorial role because the Suns and Giants pay more. They overpay their players to be able to keep them safe, so therefore they hit their salary cap quicker. The only problem with what you're saying is a bit like the Swans had the COLA and the cost of living. They know it's coming anyway, so we won't include it in your contract, Adam, but not in a wink. Now, we've probably got another couple hundred K for you down the track.
Yeah,
that's coming. But I certainly agree that there needs to be something for the Suns and Giants especially, and Brisbane, that the Northern States, that it's tougher to keep them, and... I think there should be, and how that's audited and how that's laid out, I think there needs to be some work on it and needs to be accountable on it, not any loose form, but I think they need some help.
All right, I'll ask another question. With what happened to Carlton on the weekend, is that going to have an impact on players wanting to come to that football club next year? Because they've made it very public that they want to get free agents in and they want to get uncontracted players and they'll trade and they'll do all these sorts of things. Is that going to make it harder or is it unfair on Carlton to just sort of say, well, that's just that bad, we don't want to go there?
No, I think they've put themselves in a really vulnerable position, the Blues, and like St Kilda as well, who have been active or wanting to be active in the free agency market, poor performing teams are not attractive to really good players. there's actually no reason why you, well, very few reasons why you would want to go and play for a team that is so poor performing. So if I'm Tom, let's just use Tom Lynch and Rory Sloane. If you've got a choice to take, let's just say it's $1.5 million at Carlton for Tom Lynch, or $1 million, $800,000, $900,000 at Richmond, I know where I'm playing.
Yeah, take Richmond.
Richmond every day.
So to
answer
your question, yes, it is difficult.
So you're,
it's very difficult.
You're coaching Carlton, Rocket. What's your sell to the Blues? What's your sell coffee to try and get,
well,
someone
ask,
to Carlton?
Daniel, he accepted it. You got a coffee card and half price
20%, 20% off merchandise. what's your sell?
What are you, the existing coach or a new coach?
No, I'm
saying take Brendan out of it. Yeah. So the one that you're already selling a rebuild.
Yeah. You're either Brendan Bolton or Andrew McKay or Steve Silvani. You're sitting down with a high profile player to get them to come to Carlton.
Oh right, okay. Sorry, I thought you were selling to the board.
Yeah. So how are you getting them to come?
Difficult. Difficult. I mean, you've got to paint hope and you've got to paint a picture and paint that there'll be others coming with them. But at the moment, they had 17 players over their two teams that were from other clubs. They had 9 in the seconds and 8 in the seniors from other clubs. They had 9 playing in the Northern Blues from other clubs. So are they the right players? Did they recruit correctly? It just shouldn't be playing. For the way their team's playing, if there's 9 players from other clubs, they shouldn't be playing in Northern Blues. So... and they probably try to get them at the right age and try to fill a hole. But back to your question, I don't know. It's difficult. It's not going to be a long haul. So it'd have to be a player that's in for the long haul. It's not going to be an older player because they're not going to be around for too long. And here's a 23, 24-year-old they need to trade for. So it's not going to be free agency. So it's certainly a tough gig.
All right, so that's from a coaching perspective. From a playing perspective, Jimmy, if you're Mark Murphy... And you saw what you saw on the weekend. Mm. Are you thinking, geez, I've just spent a week thinking about my future up at Byron Bay. I've come back and I've seen that. Is that changing your view on what you want to do as a footballer?
No, because if you have been in that environment as Mark Murphy, you've seen more than just that. Let's call it what it was. It was a pathetic first half. It was. You've seen more of that. You'd probably need to actually sit down with Soss and Bolts and go, right, be up front and honest with me. We're not talking to the public. How far away is this? And you almost need to do the whole magnet thing again. Show me the side that I'm playing with. You know, am I spending the next 2 years with, as Rocket was saying, guys you're just bringing in to fill an age demographic, but they're not actually guys that are going to help me win a premiership. So you actually need to know the plan. If you're a senior player like Mark Murphy, you've earned that right. You've been there, you've been down the bottom of the ladder for your whole entire career pretty much. A couple of final series, I know that. But you actually need to know it. Like, don't mess me around. Tell me exactly what it is.
But would they know, though?
They have to know. It's part of their list management plan. You have
to
know.
It's their job to know that.
It's their job.
It's a bit like what we've been saying, though, and Jim said about having an external person come in to at every club to give you a critique about where your list is at. When you're internal, you overrate where your list is at.
Because you pick them.
Well, look at this and this. But your judgment's clouded by... what their best producers and no injuries.
Yeah.
So St Kilda is an example. They're thinking about finals and maybe a top four. Well, that was unrealistic. Carlton as well, where we're going to improve. Well, they've actually gone backwards. So you need an unemotional view of where your list is at. And us as coaches and football departments, you tend to want to sell hope, as a club sell hope, but also to the board and CEO. You want to say, well, we're going to get better, because you don't want to say, listen, champ, we're actually going to go backwards. Well, they don't want to hear that, so it's about job tenure then as well.
On the flip side of that discussion from Carlton, Fremantle were less experienced and younger than Carlton on the weekend.
And that's including the likes of Sandilands and Fox.
And put on a clinic. They were fantastic.
We talked about this last week. The thing that I love about Fremantle is that their young players are all from the draft. They're not from other clubs. They've been taught the Fremantle way, whatever it is. There's 7 or 8 of them that have all come from the drafts. So you talk about Carlton attacking the last 3 drafts. That's what Fremantle's done. They're miles ahead of Carlton.
They're hard-nosed players too. I've watched them a bit this year. Brayshaw and Chera are hard-nosed players. They're not the... They've got some flash, but they're not the game's not built on the flash.
It's built on hard work.
Yeah, it is.
In the contest.
Still think there needs to be a royal commission as to how that Fremantle got picked two for Lachie Weller.
It's a very fine question considering Lachie's performance so far. But
I can answer that. Well, obviously they didn't want to let him go. I think, which Lloyd is it over there? Brad Lloyd. Brad Lloyd heard that the Suns were really desperate to get him, as in we didn't want players out, so he's a player a chance to get back in, and they played hard. He played hardball, so there was totally Brad Lloyd, and said, let's pick two or nothing.
Yeah, he was giggling.
And the Suns succumbed.
The lure. Brad Lloyd, you send him out the nightclubs, you send him out, you
well,
bring him back.
Well, if that's the case, then there's some Gold Coast people that need to be put into the witness box.
Oh, very much.
Yes.
10-8, we need to get to a break. Come back and close up with a couple of other games across the weekend. Port Adelaide Bulldogs was Thursday night, but Sydney West Coast is worth chatting about as well from Friday night footy. Rocket Eater, Monday analyst with us on The Breakfast Club. Don't forget, from 8:30, Michael Falgate on Racing Pulse after a big weekend of racing. Friday night footy, boys, was a fascinating encounter. Sydney and West Coast, we built it up to be one of the games of the round. It was certainly pretty good. Although different, Sydney boys had the quite rare distinction of winning the game without scoring the goal in the first or the last quarter. Rocket, that is an unusual setup they got going there at Sydney.
It is. It's a bit of rope a dope, is it?
Yeah, it was. Exactly what it is.
They wear you down. Yeah, they. But they look dangerous at times, Sydney. I thought it was a terrific game, and it was a really close contest. But both teams made a lot of errors between the arcs. Both teams went really short. Obviously, West Coast were trying to hit targets, and so were Sydney. And they missed targets quite a bit without a super pressure on them. McGovern made a horrendous mistake there in the last quarter. Jack made a few. There was just some errors that both teams, and they can't afford to make those errors once they get into the finals. But it was a good game.
Yeah, it was a bit of wind blowing. I was lucky enough to be up there, and they played kick to kick in the first quarter from half back to half back. So they both tried to kick it long and take it to the contest. But they're both so well drilled defensively. And after quarter time, they were like, oh, let's try and make our way through. But then the pressure was too much. Look, I think Sydney handballed their way through, where West Coast were trying to short kick their way through.
The feature half for me on Friday night from a Sydney point of view, and I think it's why they've improved, is the youngsters and what they're doing. So in the midfield, Florent had 29, Hewitt 24, who continues to improve as a
footballer. He played really well on Shuey too.
And he's had some big scalps this year. A Lear in defence, but then the forwards, and Papley, Ronk, two goals each. Haywood was good. McCartan looks good.
McCartan looks very good.
So when Hanbury and Parker and Kennedy are probably not quite at their best at the moment, it's the youngsters that have, I think, lifted their game to keep them inside the top four.
McCartan looks like he's filled the Richards role.
Xavier Richards.
Xavier Richards.
Yep.
Not Teddy.
Not Teddy.
Yep.
Xavier.
No,
yeah,
no, definitely.
I think McCartan looks quite good. Looks very solid. I still think Sydney are really dangerous team because they control the game better than anyone. Called it rope a dope. Their phases of play.
Yes.
They're able to sit and absorb as long as they want to, but then they get some real speed in their movement and they can hit the scoreboard really quickly as well. I reckon they're the best phase team in the competition.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's been games this year where the opposition have had 15 to 20 more inside 50s and they were able to, as you said, absorb it, don't get scored against. And then on the counter-attack, their ability to score, as you said, move the ball so quickly. But they do defend extremely well.
Yeah.
They get the number back. They get the plus one really quickly, certainly in transition. They work hard. Even if they're not playing super well at any stage, I think they're a real threat at the end of the year.
I'm with you.
Just their experience, just their ability. You know what you're going to get. You know they're going to stand up in big moments. It may not work, but you know they're not going to actually die wondering where other teams... Maybe at times Richmond haven't shown that. Richmond have shown that they're good consistently, but the West Coast have to do that in a final. But I think Sydney are a real threat at the end of the year.
They were 25 points up at three-quarter time, but it felt like 50 points.
Yeah, it did.
They just had that game in control. When we think of the Suns the next day, that they were leading by 30 points, and you just could never be too confident what would happen. With Sydney, you know that the game's done.
And Sinclair is in great touch. In the ruckman, he took on both Lysette and then Nguyen. Probably took the points over both of them.
It's been one of the stories with Tippett retiring and Naismith going down. Sinclair had to be the one to step up and play that dominant ruck role. And he's been unbelievable, Jim. You're right. Been one of the good stories for Sydney through the campaign. You've been one of the good stories for us this year, Rocket.
Gee, Daniel, you're a beauty.
We love having you on a Monday morning. We cannot wait to see you next Monday as well for more action round 14X in the AFL. We appreciate your time.